Merivale, A Man of His Time. Written by Rose Tremaine and read by Sean Barrett.
Part 1. The Great Enormity. Chapter 1. On this day, which is the 9th of November, in the year 1683, a most singular thing has occurred. I was taking my habitual midday dinner of boiled chicken with carrots and small ale, when my manservant Will came into my dining room at Bidnold Manor, bearing in his gnarled old hands a package wrapped in torn paper and bound with faded ribbon. He placed this object at my right hand, thus causing a cloud of dust to puff onto my plate of food. "Take care, Will," said I, feeling all my breath drawn in, and then expelled in such an almighty sneeze that it flecked the tablecloth with tiny morsels of carrot. "What is this relic?"
"I do not know, Sir Robert," said Will, attempting a dispersal of the dust by waving his misshapen fingers back and forth.
"You do not know? But how has it arrived in the house?"
"Chambermaid, sir."
"You got it from one of the maids?"
"Found under your mattress."
I wiped my mouth and blew my nose with a striped, very faded dinner napkin once given to me by the king, and laid my hands upon the parcel, which, in truth, appeared like a thing purloined from some pharaoh's tomb far down in the dry earth. I would have questioned Will further about its unlikely provenance and the reason of its sudden discovery on this particular day, but Will had already turned and was embarked on his slow and limping return journey from the dining table to the door, and to have called him back might well have occasioned some physical catastrophe, which I had no heart to risk. Alone once more, I tugged at the ribbon, noting some stains upon it, as of mouse or fly droppings, and the notion that some creature might have had its whole lowly existence beneath my mattress caused me a brief moment of amusement. Then I had the package open, and saw before me a thing so long forgotten by me, I think it would never have come back into my mind of its own accord by any means. It was a book. Rather, it had once aspired to the immortal status of a book, but never did acquire any such immortality, but only remained a collation of pages, written in my inky, looping hand. Long ago, in the year 1668, when I returned here at last to Bidnold Manor, I contemplated destroying this book, but I did not. I gave it to Will, with the instruction to consign it in some hiding place of his own choosing, and to contrive to forget where that hiding place might be. The pages contained the story of my former life. I had set down this story at a time of great confusion, in the last years of my fourth decade, when I felt for the first time the radiance of King Charles II fall upon my insignificant shoulders. I had hoped the writing of it would enable me to understand what role I might play in my profession as a physician, in my country and in the world. But though in all my frenzied scribblings I believed myself to be moving towards some kind of wisdom, I cannot now recall that I ever arrived there. I was driven from place to place like a hungry dog. It was a time of marvels and glories, crammed with sorrows. And now, to read my own words, and to see this life again unfold before me, brought to my heart an almost unbearable overload of feeling. I take up the book and go to my library. I lay the book on my escritoire, and attend to the feebly burning fire, placing more logs upon it and exhorting it to remember why it was lit. And that reason was to warm me. But I am still shivering. I wonder whether I shall send again for Will, who, from long and weary habit, has a knack for coaxing flames into life. But in these late times of the 1680s, when I am approaching my 57th birthday, I am more and more reluctant to assign to Will any task whatsoever, owing to his extreme age, 74 years, and his many infirmities. Indeed, the whole question of Will is one which hugely vexes me, for I do clearly see that, in regard to this faithful servant of mine, I am caught in a very painful trap